Hello and welcome to episode 22 of the Match of the Week podcast here on the Pro Wrestling Only podcast network. I'm Tim, and joining me as always is Tanner. Tanner, how are we doing?
I'm doing well. It's been a banner last couple of weeks in the land of me, and yes. it just things I'm interested in. So yes. I feel like the universe is working on my side for once. So
yeah, I will confer concur with you that you now knowing that Animal Crossing is coming to Nintendo Switch, forget the wrestling. You are here. This is now an Animal Crossing podcast.
I figured this is what we're talking about. This I'm not prepared to talk about any matches.
No, we're not. We're really not. This is we're 100% going to be coming to Nintendo Direct reporting podcast. Ooh. That's what we're here for.
Okay. Thank God.
But hey, you know what? So here's a funny notion for you guys. So this podcast, 30 minutes long. How about we do a match with a 30-minute time limit on it? Eh? That sounds cool. So we're talking about the Iron Man Challenge from Beach Blast 1992, Ravishing Rick Rude versus Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Really, the first quote-unquote Iron Man style match for the major companies at the time. Really, if you think about Iron Man matches since then, there really haven't been too many. There's been, it's one of the lesser used gimmicks in I would say in a big match setting, which is really odd when you think about it. Of all the gimmicks that, you know, endurance in a pro wrestling ring, you would hope that would be one of the things they lean on, but of course with shorter attention spans come shorter matches. But yeah, you know, Tanner, this is a really fun match to go back and rewatch, even, you know, over a quarter century later, just because even for a 30-minute match, this really has the pacing of a match much shorter of it, and really only a couple of times you kind of get slowed down to it, and I think it really kind of plays off, especially now in a modern setting, very well.
Oh yeah, I think thank God there's two guys in this like that have ridiculous cardio.
Oh yeah,
that they can work a 30-minute match with, you know, sprint pacing, because right. I don't know. Like, I feel like the Iron Man stipulation works better with 30 minutes than 60 minutes. I feel like with 60 minutes, you're building there has to be downtime there or you're going to die. So right. I feel like with 30 minutes, it's like, and it's also more realistic. Like, there's matches, plain matches that go over 30 minutes. So I feel like a 30-minute time limit is optimal. And obviously I think some of the best matches of all time are 30-minute Iron Man matches, but
We might talk about that match soon enough. Yeah, yeah, you never know. Yeah.
But obviously, talk about Seth Rollins versus Dolph. No,
Christ. I hope y'all haven't turned off the podcast yet. I really hope not. Really hope not.
But no, and this is like, so, I mean, one of the first times it's really worked. It with the 30, like obviously you have, you know, Brett versus Shawn. Or this is before Brett versus no.
It's oh like, yeah, yeah. No, Brett Shawn is 1996.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I get
WrestleMania 12. So
see, right. It's so weird because when I think of WrestleMania in my head, I'm like, that shit started in the 80s. So all the early, yes, WrestleManias are in the 80s in my head canon. But yeah. So this is, and again, it just works really well with 30 minutes. I think they do like as much as you can do with the time limit here.
Yeah, this is packed full. I think the one thing for me is somebody who, you know, just loves Ricky Steamboat. And I do think it's kind of odd that they go with the 30-minute time limit here, considering that Steamboat has basically built up this aura around him going 60 minutes with Flair all those times. Yeah. You know, he wasn't as well known then, obviously. I think people, it was only 3 years prior to this that he went 60 at Clash, you know, 6 with Flair.
Yeah.
But you know, in my mind, watching this, knowing of all the times that they went 60 or close to it, 30 minutes for Steamboat, even though, like you said, tremendous cardio, it kind of seems like a breeze. Yeah, right.
It's like, going 30.
Sure, why not? Right. But he, what's really interesting about this match is really the layout is the thing that I think a lot of people remember from it for people who are on the smart side of the business, so to speak. It really is laid out perfectly. Like, this is a match that there's tropes in it that are very specific for the time, specific to WCW. But at the same time, if you're laying out a match, each kind of pivot point, each transition, each fall is done in such a great way that it really does amplify this match, especially in hindsight, because what they do with 30 minutes in 1992 is pretty remarkable. It really is.
Oh, yeah. And like, it's weird, too, because like the match, like there's obviously, you know, an overarching like narrative in the match, but also like you can watch almost each fall as its own separate thing. And there's just own separate story, like outside of like Rue doing his thing. But like it's weird. Like, I feel like you don't get that a lot with an Iron Man match. Like it's almost a good standalone piece, as well as being a really good, like, overarching story. So I think they did that really well here. And again, it's 92. So, I mean, not like they were working with a whole bunch, but I like, obviously, this whole card really is great.
Yeah.
We could probably have picked like two or three matches just off this card, but like this really stands out just from the fact of what they end up doing with the time. And how it seems breezy. Like, I'm not one to like long matches usually, but like this one flies by.
Yeah. And in 1992, if you're looking at it from a worldwide perspective, obviously what's going on in Japan with, you know, Liger and the New Japan Junior Division, All Japan had finally at this point basically passed the baton to Misawa in 92. He beats Hansen for the Triple Crown and starts that incredible title reign that leads to everybody's favorite decade. All Japan Women in 1992 did their intrapromotional stuff and kind of ramped it up. WCW in 1992, I still think it's my favorite year in the history of the promotion. It's just chock full of stuff from top to bottom.
Yeah.
And I think what really did make it unique was Bill Watts's, tending to want to elongate stuff a little bit, really try and tell stories. Obviously, the main event of this pay-per-view is still, I think, a little bit, a little not controversial, but it's argued about, the Steiners versus Gordy and Williams. But yeah, this match, like, I really like that it's very traditional setup. You have a fiery start by Steamboat. He gets out. First 7 to 8 minutes really are dictated by his pace. But my favorite part is that it takes one shot from Rude, a blow to the head on a Torner charge, for him to take the first fall with a handful of tights. And like, if that's the basis for what a fall means in this style of match, man, that I think that sets a tone that really makes you really look after basically anything in this match that could lead to a fall.
Oh, yeah. That's also what I like about it. Like, there, it's not like, you know, they're going for their biggest, you know, stuff at the get go. They're like, okay, we have the 30 minutes. It's, you know, unlimited pinfalls essentially. So you can drop a fall, like, or, you know, whatever. And I think that works really well with this Iron Man match. And it doesn't really get used as much. Like, it, like, even with the few Iron Man matches that we get now, like, that's never really a thing of somebody like dropping a fall off of like a basic maneuver. Like, it's usually what we would consider a signature or a finisher. And then, you know, they start the match off with that. And it's just, to me, makes sense. Like, right, in the sense of, okay, they're working with 30 minutes. They can do pretty much whatever they want. And yeah, so like it feels, I don't want to say less urgent, because that's not the right word, but it feels like there's not as much on the line. Like, it's not like you're going to lose the match if you drop a fall, you know, 6-7 minutes into a 30 minute match. So it feels a lot, I guess, more methodical and like a smarter, right, wrestled match.
It allows things that don't normally mean much or are kind of used as just next steps to the end game. It really turns that into a situation where you have to watch and you have to be, you know, alert to every little part of the match. I mean, let's kind of go through the falls here. So that's the first fall, right? And then soon after that, Rude, because of the fact he was able to get Steamboat like that, is able to hit the Rude Awakening. And even though his ribs are killing him after what Ricky did for the first 8 minutes, he's all of a sudden up to nothing. And so his control portion of this match then turns into a neat little bit of psychology. Perhaps the most famous spot in the match is Rude in a time where WCW had a rule where coming off the top rope was a disqualification. Thank you, Bill. we won't give that. But hits a knee drop. And, you know, because of that, he's disqualified. However, once they get Ricky back to a standing base, which is how things, you know, move forward onto the next portion of the match, he then small packages him and gets the fall. And it's 3-1. So he basically is like, it doesn't matter that I lost the fall. I get it right back and I've done more damage to my opponent, which is that's great. That's exactly the type of stuff that a well put together match kind of looks for. It's those little things to kind of work in there. And then from there, you get the Steamboat comeback, where after Rude is just working on the neck and the back, and Steamboat is able to reverse a tombstone at one point into a pinfall. He's able to reverse the Rude Awakening into a backslide for a pinfall. And then Rude, because he thinks that he, you know, has the win still, he puts the sleeper on, and Steamboat walks up the turnbuckles, turns into a pinning combination, and that's the final fall. And just like the way that those are laid out, it's remarkable that those are kind of the finishes throughout, because it really paints the picture that in a match like this, every move matters. And that's something that you really don't get nowadays, where it's all about the stretch run and it's really all about what's the big move that people think is going to finish it, but then somebody kicks out just before three, which has become the wrestling trope of the 21st century.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It, like, going back to what you said about everything like feeling important, like that sleeper hold, like towards the end, is like one of the best sleeper holds I've ever seen in a wrestling match.
Yes. Tremendous.
And like it, you even have the ref like checking on like Ricky's eyes to make sure like, oh, he's not KO'd or whatever.
Oh, that's such a great, Randy Anderson's great in this match. He really is. He's tremendous.
And it's you just don't get that now. Like it's so funny. It's like, I'm not trying to sound jaded about current wrestling, considering this match took place 3.5 years before I was born, but it's so good. And just like you don't get like checking in on the eyes, like even now, like all over the world, like if somebody's like KO'd or whatever, you have them like picking up and slamming their arms, or in some cases slapping them and being like, are you awake or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like checking it makes it feel a lot more legit. Like, kind of like, I don't want to use boxing as an example because there's no sleeper holds in boxing, but it's kind of like boxing in the way is like, okay, I got to make sure that you still have your shit together and you can still go. I don't know. I think it's a great touch to the match that baffles me. Like, out of all the things that are stolen in professional wrestling matches, how this has not been stolen in like every long match ever.
Yeah. And it's funny, we alluded to the other 30-minute Iron Man, Iron Woman match that you and I both love, and that's obviously Sasha Banks versus Bayley in 2014, but like in 2015, pardon me. But it's, I think what's interesting to me now especially is that I really don't understand how when you know, people are getting coached up, they have access to all this video, and you got these guys who are around at this time, and this match was a match that I think at the time, especially, I would imagine within the business was very much well received just for what they did in 30 minutes, like we've talked about. And so, I think that the way, obviously, like Rude's rib selling here is tremendous. Like, he's always, I think Rude's selling is perhaps his best asset and continues to be his best asset throughout the rest of his career. But he really, I think, especially here, puts not only those selling of the ribs, but kind of the long term, the pacing of the match, how it wears him down. Like, I really was buying that because of what Steamboat did early, Rude just got worse and worse with his wind as the match went on, because that was Steamboat's strategy. And it was a good one, you know? And I really like that there's subtle touches to this match that really add to it. And they're not things like aha moments. Like, they're not like, oh yeah, like this is in there so people notice it. It's just how the guys decided to work it. And it's really just neat to watch this stuff kind of come together over the course of the match.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I really wish, like, 92 was like 2018, in the fact that we got to see a lot of house show stuff, because I would have loved to seen what, like, they were, because they worked, you know, each other on house shows for the first half of 92, pretty much. I would have loved to seen them, like, slowly, like, build up to this match, because you can see it, like, in some matches now. Like, I remember the Braun Big Show series, for example, where like, they were built to these simple spots, and then, like, 8 or 10 months later on TV, when they actually were feuding on TV, they, like, built to those spots, and, like, you know, really did nothing added to the match outside of being like, oh man, like, you could see them, like, starting or teasing this in, you know, 6 or 8 months ago on this random house show in Des Moines, but here they are doing it, you know, main eventing Raw or whatever. Or, you know, Roman did the same thing on Sunday, where they did the spear through the table in the corner, which has, like, never been done on TV. So it's cool to me to, like, analyze it from that point. Like, I wonder if, like, they had done, like, the teased DQ off the top rope before, or if they had done the sleeper hold on house shows. Like, who knows? And, you know, we may never know, unless you were, you know, a WCW groupie in 92. So I don't know. Like, that's a part of the match that I really enjoy. Like, you can obviously see, like, that they've worked with each other a lot. So, like, it's like a science, and it's like a perfect professional wrestling match. I think it's on probably the best match. I don't want to say the best match in 92, because that gets me in a lot of hot water, but maybe one of the best matches in 1992.
It is. Like, I think it's very much up there, especially in WCW, although, like I talked about, 92 WCW is one of the most ridiculous in-ring years that the company had, if not the most
ridiculous. One of the most ridiculous years any company has ever had. Like, honestly.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, we talk about 1993 is probably the best year top to bottom. Like, it's 93, 89, 83, everybody said like 2000 for a while, and I was just like, eh, whatever. But like, I know for a fact that, like, especially me growing up, like 8 years old, 7 years old, 8 years old, like, watching WCW 92 was kind of formative as far as like how much I enjoyed this style of wrestling. Yeah. It was neat to, you know, watch, you know, WCW Saturday Night, and really, you get some great stuff just kind of out of the blue that you don't really expect. And a lot of that comes in Great American Bash, you know, the next pay-per-view after this, you know, with the obvious, we've, you know, Sting Vader match, which is, we might talk about that at some point. But I feel like, especially this time, like, to have a match like this, which was just another way, I think, of trying to show how WCW was really pushing, especially a guy like Bill Watts with his athletic background and how he ran UWF and in the Mid-South, like, it is an athletic based type of atmosphere, and you're putting guys out there who are great athletes, and you want to show it off because you think that's their best foot forward. And that's exactly what they do here. And I think that is, it's the perfect mashup of guys who can work that long and work well that long while also kind of carrying the brand, so to speak.
Yeah. And like, again, I didn't watch the TV. Like, I haven't seen a lot of stuff I've seen a lot of stuff from 92 WCW, but it's weird to me that this isn't a main event, considering, you know, they kind of push that athleticism forward. And, like, I can't think of really a more athlete based match than a total endurance test that's 30 minutes long, right? And pretty much you have to beat your opponents more times than they beat you. So that was always kind of weird in my head. Like, in, you know, in hindsight, it makes sense, but I can't get over this match just because I still think, like, I mean, again, this match took place over, 26 years ago. I still think it's probably minimum top three Iron Man match ever, 30 or 60 minute.
I think it's still the best. It's one of those things where even as much as I love Sasha and Bayley, because especially that match having so much going for it because of what happened in Brooklyn. I mean, they had a lot of momentum there. You know, Rude and Steamboat in 92 had as much momentum as anybody, really. I mean, Rude and, had done the great Steamboat, had loved doing this spot as a babyface where the heels beat him up and they basically smash his face on the concrete and break his nose, so to speak. And that was a thing that happened in 1992 in between these guys. And they've been, feuding back and forth. There's the great Super Brawl match where Rude won the U.S. title because of Paul Heyman's use of the cell phone dressed up as the ninja and all that stuff. Like, there were a lot of things that these two did together that really paid off in this match. Like, there's a lot of buy-in for a match like this because you understood, like, Rude, he's the best physique in WCW, and he wants to show that he can go with a guy like Steamboat, who face Flair all those times and who's been in long matches for so long of his career. And like, I just love that there's that built-in, buy-in with a match like this that because of just the air of what these guys are like, you really like, okay, now you really get to put it to the test, who's the better guy. And I really do. Like, I think that we are now in a situation where I think it's more common because the dream match atmosphere, what have you, and it's more about like one-offs or like, oh, this guy should face this guy. That would be cool. But I think we really underappreciate how much the buy-in between two guys, even if it's not a one-on-one feud for like 6 months or a year, just that they interact with each other, they're around each other, they do things off of each other. Like, that type of stuff carries so much more weight than I think a lot of people realize, that it's really neat to see that really come to a head in a match like this.
Oh, no. Yeah. It's like, I always enjoy like the, I don't want to say on and again, off again feuds, but like two guys that just don't like each other in wrestling. And then like, they'll occasionally, see each other's in tags or I think nowadays Japan really does it, better in the way where like, just sometimes two dudes that don't like each other just interact in a tag match. And it's just this hate filled thing. Like in All Japan, where you have Suwama and Joe Doering, they always just fight because, Joe left Evolution, which was Suwama stable. So like, you have them, like they could not interact in a match for 2 months, but then this random house show in, who knows Japan, they just start like chopping and, lariating the shit out of each other. And it's great. So that's what I like in wrestling, where like, they don't have to feud all the time to be like at ends or at odds.
Yeah. Like, I think what's interesting nowadays, I think really the only time you see something like that is at the Royal Rumble, which is really weird to me. I understand that's like, you get more interaction and stuff, but it's like, I don't understand how you don't do stuff like that more times. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't understand how you don't kind of, parallels and then, they intertwine and then they go separate ways and, they meet up again. And just like that kind of stuff over and over again. Like I think the only thing that really matters nowadays is more direct contact and just kind of getting it out of the way and then moving on to something else. When I'm sorry, like The Miz and Daniel Bryan hadn't wrestled each other in 8 years, essentially. And they finally locked up. And now there's build up. There's buy-in from folks on this stuff. So it's kind of odd that we can have that happen the same time that you're basically just pairing somebody up with somebody for a month here, 2 months there, and then they go do something else. And there's just not a lot there to really buy into. It's really weird.
It's especially in the WWE where there's so many moving parts all the time. It's odd, really. Especially now what they're doing, like, on the TV, we're like, hey, some of the 205 Live guys are managers, but we're not going to tell you why.
And it's, right. Yeah. Like,
yeah, you
know, it is. It's kind of,
yeah, odd. It's just weird in the sense of like, okay. Like, it's a lot of weird. We could analyze the WWE for hours, but
yes. That's not this podcast. Yeah, there are other podcasts on this network that allow you to do that.
But yeah, we won't, you know, do that.
30 minutes. That's yeah. We get in, we get out.
It's definitely, though, one of the, like, weird in the sense that it just doesn't happen more often. Like, it seems like a surefire, easy thing a lot of the time, and then it just feels like, oh, okay, that's not what they're doing.
And even a thing like Ciampa and Gargano, which I think a lot of us had a lot of buy-in, obviously, because of what happened, and because of the injury to Ciampa, you had this layoff where, because of the fact that they had been away from each other for essentially an entire year before they locked up, you know, there's buy-in there, but now there's like an oversaturation with that, right? Like there's the situation where now it's like, oh, well, you know, maybe it's great that they're together, but now you just see them, you know, going after it. And maybe they've probably done things a bit too much. They've already now faced each other 3 times in 4 months. They're basically going to be locked up. And now what's interesting is it looks like they're going to diverge. And so if they do face each other, like a lot of people think, at WrestleMania weekend, because they're going to be back in New York and it's Brooklyn, like that's essentially 7 months, 8 months.
Yeah.
From SummerSlam
from weekend. August. Yeah. 8 months.
So like, what's that going to be like? And so that's the kind of thing, like with this type of match is they, you know, with Roode and Steamboat, there were always tags. There were always six mans. There was Wrestle War. There was War Games. There was the Dangerous Alliance. All that stuff. You got to see them interact with each other. There were heated exchanges, but it wasn't something where the focal point was always on them. The focal point was on basically everything around them and how those pieces interacted with each other. But then when they do get together like this, that's where it really pays off. And I feel like there's just not that much investment in the environment that leads up to a match like this as there is anymore.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. It's, again, it's weird. Going back to the Ciampa Gargano thing, you've gotten to the point now of such oversaturation where like a lot of the viewers are actively rooting against Gargano, who at one point seemed like the best babyface in the world.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive how you managed to mess that one up.
It's just mind boggling. You have him come out against Andy Almas in January. He is the best babyface in the world at that point. There's an argument they probably should have won the belt. But then at the same time, he beats Ciampa, gets reinstated, and now he's in this kind of this feud where it's a bit too much. And I think nowadays, especially, it's really interesting to see a match like this where as much as they were across from each other, there was still something to buy into with these two.
Mm-hmm. That it still seemed fresh in a weird way.
That made this match worth something. And it's not just a stipulation. It's what led up to that stipulation. And that's the thing I think that really sticks out with me. The other thing, too, I wanted to bring this up really quick before we finish up. So Steamboat's finisher is always been the crossbody off the top rope, right? And you're talking about a match where the inverse of that happens with Roode dropping that knee. And Steamboat doesn't even try to do that because he's a babyface and you don't try and break the rules. And so I always thought it was interesting that Steamboat was in a match that literally in a time of year or in the time of WCW where the move he's probably most famous for, he can't use.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Very weird.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's again, such a weird rule. Like
Congrats, Bill Watts. You've just, I don't know.
You banned, you know, Steamboat's iconic, you know, all time moves. It's, you know,
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
And also no mats on the outside because men don't need mats on the outside.
Men don't need mats. We bump on concrete and we like it.
God damn.
Sounds like training to be a wrestler at CZW or something.
I was about to say, that sounds like something Ian Rott would do. So
yeah.
Oh man. Well, hey, but this match, like, literally it's on the award-winning World Wrestling Federation network. It's I think there's an Iron Man collection actually that you can go into and find this relatively quickly. And so you can do it. I think that's the way I found it. So just go on there, check it out. Great match. And just make sure that you know you're getting 30 minutes worth it, and it's going to be worth watching, you know, watching all 30 minutes of it. It's a great match, and it's totally worth it.
And then don't watch Shawn versus Brett because it sucks.
So. That's true. That is true. Very true. So, Tanner, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can follow me on Twitter at Tanner1495. I also co-host another podcast with my friends. We kind of just talk about everything. Called the All You Can Hear podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at AYCH podcast.
Follow me at Mr. Tim Livingston, and also follow at PPW Petaluma. We just actually, this is a wild thing, but Lagunitas, the brewing company, has this thing they do called the Beer Circus, where they do kind of like a carnival thing for a charity here in the North Bay area. And PPW was part of the show. The carnies out there with the carnies. And so that was a really cool thing. But that was kind of the warm up for the return, we hope, of PPW this fall, this winter. So just follow at PPW Petaluma, and also on YouTube at PPW Petaluma to see the matches we've had coming up on 4 years now. So pretty cool stuff. You can also make sure to go to ProWrestlingOnly.com, and you can check out on the podcast tab all the podcasts that we offer on this network. And Charles and the rest of the gang there are going to have that updated for you to check out. And you can always subscribe and keep on listening to this in the podcast feed of your choice. So thanks for joining us. I think I got all that out of the way. Tanner, did I cover everything? I covered everything. Yeah.
Okay. Sounded like everything to me.
Sweet. All right. Well, good deal. We hope you enjoyed this, and we'll be back next week with a match that doesn't go 30 minutes, but we think you'll enjoy it just as much. So thanks a lot, and we'll see you next time.
Toodles.